WXLQ Bristol, Vermont, and WXLJ Whitehall, Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Thursday, April 4th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
A new report from the state controller's office says emergency responders across the state are struggling with staffing and costs, including here in the North Country.
It costs us about $550 to run a single call. If we go out for a Medicare patient, we might get $350. So if we go to a Medicaid or a Medicare, which are our two biggest payers, we lose money.
The report recommends the state step in.
Watertown Zoo has been struggling to stay open for months. This week, the city council has approved some short-term funding to keep it open for the season, but
I really think that we really need to come up with a long-term solution and sit down and figure out what will the business model be. It's important to have that before investing any more.
And we talk with the director and crew of an original theater piece at SUNY Plattsburgh, This Is How We Walk on the Moon, and includes outer space, astronauts, and a trip to the moon.
We improvised to get to the text, and then we're also pulling text from Annie Dillard's essay on the total eclipse, which I highly recommend reading before the eclipse. And also we've used some Dalton Day poetry.
Well, that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by AdirondackExplorer.com and AdirondackAlmanac.com, presenting daily updated news on public policy, environmental issues, and local communities in the Adirondack Park, and Cronin's Golf Resort, a regional destination for golf, dining, and lodging in the southern Adirondacks. Details at Cronin'sGolfResort.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Winter storm warnings and winter weather advisories are in effect for all of the North Country and northern Vermont through 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's according to the National Weather Service, which says the area could get an additional 3 to 15 inches of heavy snow, with storm totals up to 16 to 22 inches in some places. Wind gusts up to 50 miles per hour and a light glaze of ice are also possible. Forecasters say the heaviest snowfall is occurring this morning. The snow should taper off by later this afternoon, and forecasters predict less snow for other parts of the North Country, including Jefferson and Lewis counties, though the greatest accumulations along eastern Lake Ontario are likely on the Tug Hill Plateau by tonight. National Grid and NYSEG are reporting scattered power outages this morning around the region. Some of the most slippery roads are being reported in Clinton County. Friday and Saturday's forecasts call for a light wintry mix with clear skies in the extended forecast for Sunday and Monday.
Emergency medical services have been struggling across the country and New York State for years now, especially since 2020 with the onset of the coronavirus pandemic. A new and fairly dire report from the state controller says EMS agencies are struggling with staffing and costs and that they need more help from the state. Amy Feiereisel has more.
Imagine you or a loved one is having a heart attack in a rural area of New York State, and you call for an ambulance, but you're not sure one will come. That's what was happening back in 2009 in three small towns in Jefferson County, Teresa, Antwerp, and Philadelphia. They had volunteer ambulances run by their fire departments, but they were understaffed and missing a lot of calls.
One of the towns missed 95% of their calls the last year that they existed. One of the towns missed 50% of their calls the last year they existed.
That's Lance Ronis. He grew up in Philadelphia.
What had happened is my mother, who had lived in Philadelphia all of her life, called the ambulance, and her ambulance never showed up.
That's what prompted Ronis to start Indian River Ambulance Service, a nonprofit corporation dedicated to running EMS in the area. It has a mixed model with 6 employees and about 24 active volunteers. Ronis says they've never missed a call, but still struggle with volunteerism, making ends meet, and being able to pay their staff enough. These were some of the main points in a new state report released last week by New York's controller, Thomas DiNapoli. The report finds that the cost of operating rescue squads has increased by 60% since 2012, forcing many EMS agencies to subsidize the cost of ambulance rides. A big part of that is that they have to bill insurance companies for their services. And Ronis says the Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement rate is inadequate.
It costs us about $550 to run a single call. If we go out for a Medicare patient, we might get $350.
He says Medicaid pays even less than that.
So if we go to a Medicaid or a Medicare, which are our two biggest payers, we lose money.
At the same time, the state audit shows that the number of active EMS workers in New York has fallen dramatically from about 40,000 in 2019 to 33,000 in 2022. Rona says you can blame COVID for that, declining volunteerism. But there's a bigger issue, which is that in the modern world, it's very difficult to make a career out of EMS. People aren't paid enough. $17 or $18 per hour is the current going rate.
What we were giving as the starting wage here is now not even competitive with the local steward shop. It's not competitive with working at Starbucks. It's not competitive with working at Dollar General. You know what I mean? In all of EMS, we have to raise our minimum starting wage. We can't afford to do that.
The reason they can't afford to pay them more is because EMS services are not required or mandated by New York State.
You know, fire protection is mandated by the state. Law enforcement is mandated by the state.
Simon Gardner is a paramedic. He works for four different EMS agencies in Warren and Saratoga counties.
Garbage collection is mandated by the state. It's a sanitation thing. EMS is not mandated by the state.
As a result, New York has a patchwork at-will system of emergency medical services with about 1,000 agencies, half of them volunteer-led, providing ambulance service. Gardner says someone has to figure out this question.
Is EMS public safety or is EMS healthcare?
Because right now, it's neither. Agencies make money by billing insurance companies and towns, through tax districts, through fundraisers. Gardner says that means chronic staffing issues.
And that seems to be kind of a recurring theme at a lot of the places I work. You know, anytime somebody gets sick or goes out, you know, there'll be a hole in the schedule. And you know, the administrators are kind of scrambling, looking for people. Oh, we got to cover this shift or that. You know, this person's out, blah, blah, blah. A lot of agencies don't have a real deep roster.
Gardner says there's a huge incentive for EMTs to pursue a better paid career as a nurse or a physician's assistant. Lance Ronis in Jefferson County says something has got to change so people can make a living in EMS.
Without having to kill yourself by working two full-time jobs. We're chewing up a lot of our young people. As an industry, we're chewing up young people.
The state report says, quote, the stakes are too high and the issues too complex for counties and other local governments to have to address on their own, end quote. It calls for direct state involvement in EMS data collection and guidance. It also suggests leaning into a county-based model, which is already starting to happen somewhat organically. The report finds that as smaller agencies struggle or even close, counties have been taking on a larger role in emergency services. Rona says he's all for a county model.
There's a lot of merit to the concept of a county-based system that is funded by the state that allows the independent agencies to still function as an independent agency with their own bylaws.
In Ronis's dream scenario, EMS would be an essential service like the police and trash collection, funded by taxes. Now, to be clear, the state report does not talk about funding EMS. But Ronis says the recognition that more state help is needed might be a first step in that direction. And he says the stakes really couldn't be higher.
Your mom, your dad, your husband, your wife, your kid, you know, your child, you know, that's what's at stake.
Rona says that if EMS services disappear, especially in rural areas, that can be the difference between waiting 10 minutes or an hour for an ambulance to arrive. Amy Feiereisel, North Country Public Radio.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past eight. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, SUNY Plattsburgh theater students unveil an original production tonight that includes astronauts, the moon, the sun, and an eclipse. And we've got a preview coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Potsdam guitarist Oscar Sarmiento. Northern Light is supported by Gray and Gray and Associates, CPAs, an accounting and financial services firm in Northern New York, with offices in Canton, Potsdam, and Spring Hill, Florida. GrayCPAS.com. Still moderate to heavy snow, blowing snow as well across our region. Winter storm warnings, winter weather advisories for all of the North Country through early tomorrow morning. There are some delays. North Country Community College, all campuses will open at 10 o'clock this morning. A delay at North Country Community College campuses, they're opening at 10. SUNY Canton classes are being held remotely until noon today. And the Messina Senior Citizens Office is closed with no activities because of the weather.
Public transit authorities in the North Country are making changes to their service on Monday due to eclipse-related travel. They say riders should expect delays. St. Lawrence County Public Transit says its buses will pause operations during totality. Riders can track the buses in real time using the free Passio Go app. It provides information about individual routes, schedules, and stops. Clinton County Public Transit will offer an eclipse shuttle on Monday from noon to 2 and 4 to 6 in the evening. It'll run between Plattsburgh International Airport and Plattsburgh City Beach with two stops in between. Clinton County has canceled or reduced multiple routes. We have more information on our website, ncpr.org.
Police in St. Lawrence County are investigating the death of a young woman from Watertown. Police say 18-year-old Kyla Spencer went missing from a seasonal camp on Jayville Road in Pitcairn Monday evening. A forest ranger found her body in a wooded area nearby the next day. An autopsy was performed Wednesday afternoon. The cause and manner of Spencer's death are pending lab results. Police say there's no threat to the public and the investigation remains ongoing. Anyone with information can contact state police at 518-873-2776.
Watertown's zoo has been struggling for a while now. When it closed for the winter, officials said they didn't know if or when it could reopen because of its financial issues. This week, Watertown City Council approved a new round of funding to open the local zoo for the summer season. But as Catherine Wheeler reports, city and zoo officials have not yet figured out if they can afford to keep it running in the long term.
City leaders aren't sure about what to do with Watertown Zoo. It's expensive to operate, and that's tricky when there's not a lot of spare cash laying around. The city gave the zoo $60,000 to get it through the winter, and the zoo laid off two-thirds of its staff to cut costs, according to news reports. But now it needs more funding to open for the season. So this week, the Watertown City Council narrowly approved an infusion of $100,000 into Zoo New York to keep it running. City Councilwoman Lisa Ruggiero says this money is a temporary fix.
The extra request to me is more of a band-aid on a situation.
Ruggiero voted in favor of the short-term funding, but she says there's a lot more work to do to figure out what to do next.
And I really think that we really need to come up with a long-term solution and sit down and figure out what will the business model be. I think it's important to have that before investing any more.
The Thompson Park Conservancy has been overseeing the zoo since the 1990s, but per its contract, the city does have some financial obligations. According to the Watertown Daily Times, the Conservancy is asking for $375,000 annually for 5 years to stabilize the organization. But city officials says it's not quite clear how much it'll actually need. There's nearby zoos in Syracuse and Utica, and about 30,000 people visit Zoo New York every year. Interim director Mark Irwin says zoos usually aren't self-sustaining.
But they are a net positive and economic drivers in their community. They provide local families with something to do, and they should be increasing tourism.
City residents and those in neighboring communities attended the meeting to speak in favor of keeping the zoo open. Many say it's an important place for the community. Resident Danielle Roop said her family wants the zoo to stick around.
It's one of my favorite places in Watertown to go, and also I feel like it's one of the safest places for me to take my daughter, like, on a walk year-round.
Some residents said the zoo's struggles have inspired community members to donate and volunteer. Holly Nichols said she and her daughter went to the zoo on a recent weekend to help clean up.
It was hopeful and humbling to see so many people supporting such a special place and working together to make a difference in our community. This is why funding the zoo is so crucial. We are so grateful and fortunate to have it.
But some in the community think it's time to focus the city's limited funds on more serious issues. Watertown resident Frank Batista.
We're plagued with infrastructure problems. You've been drinking contaminated water with trihalomethanes for years. I know that can's been kicked down the road because there's no money.
The city's finances are in a tight spot, too. In recent years, the city spent millions on purchasing a golf course and building a third city pool. Both were controversial decisions. And the city's contract with the hydropower plant is set to expire in 2030. It's one of the city's largest sources of revenue. Mayor Sarah Campo-Pierce voted against giving the zoo the funds. She says it's not about whether the zoo is wanted. It's about what the city needs.
I don't know that I see a situation where the city is going to be able to take care of its essential needs, address our water quality issue, address the hydro cliff that's coming, and continue to fund the zoo, because I know that that's what the zoo needs, is they need a commitment of funding year after year.
Campo-Pierce says she recognizes the need for a space like the zoo, but she wants to start reimagining what it could be.
Something that has a smaller footprint, could be utilized 12 months a year, and isn't as costly to maintain and operate. That would be my preference, because I think that bottom line, that is the most sustainable.
The City Council's Zoo Task Force will meet again soon to discuss what they need to look at to figure out this problem. The zoo says it's hoping to open for the season on May 4th. Catherine Wheeler, North Country Public Radio.
You're listening to Northern Lights right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, the moon, astronauts, and an eclipse are all part of an original theater experience that opens tonight at SUNY Plattsburgh. We've got a preview of This Is How We Walk on the Moon coming up in just a couple of minutes. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note poet Susan Nguyen on the way hummingbirds defy expectations. That's just ahead at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Snow, blowing and drifting snow, some power outages, the winter storm warning, winter weather advisories continue for all of our region. That includes northern Vermont through early tomorrow morning. Some of the heaviest snow falling this morning, blowing snow as well. There are some damaged power lines, trees. Crews are out restoring power, plowing and sanding as well, so use some extra caution on the roads this morning. The Weather Service says most of the heaviest snow should taper to light snow by this evening, and the Weather Service says a light wintry mix in the forecast for tomorrow, and then clearing skies by Sunday. Right now in Canton, snow 31 degrees.
Monday's total solar eclipse is an exciting opportunity for astronomers, citizen scientists, and artists as well. SUNY Plattsburgh Theater professor Julia Devine and her students will open an original production tonight that will include drama, dance, music, along with outer space, astronauts, and a trip to the moon. It opens tonight in Plattsburgh's Black Box Studio Theater and continues tomorrow and Saturday nights with a special 2 o'clock matinee on Saturday. Devine says, This Is How We Walk on the Moon is designed to prepare you for Monday's eclipse.
So, what came first, the eclipse or the play?
the notion that a total eclipse is coming here, I had this idea. I had the geodesic climbing dome in my backyard, and I thought, let's bring that to the theater, and that will be our set. And that's literally what we started with, was a dome, which is great, because in devised theater, sometimes you start with a line of poetry or a song or anything. And for us, it was this dome. You can climb over it. You can climb inside it. It can become a space shuttle. It can become a mountain. It's rather fun.
That's director-conceiver Julia Devine. I caught up with her via Zoom and some of her SUNY Plattsburgh design team and co-creators. Set, lighting, and projection designer Caleb Pecoraro, stage manager and photographer Olivia Davis, and Alex Rudnick, who designed the sound and composed original music for the show that includes, as Julia said, a geodesic climbing dome, lights, video, and projections.
It's definitely more of an experience, not a traditional narrative of following characters on a journey. But we do use clips from Georges Méliès's A Trip to the Moon from the early 1900s. And watching it recently, I was thinking, like, well, this is sort of like our experience. We start very abstract, and then it becomes very personal, and then into characters. We have astronauts that go to the moon, and then we go into sort of another dimension. We do have an eclipse that happens in our piece. It's in the style, I would say, maybe of a Wes Anderson sort of eclipse moment. So it is definitely an experience, but there's definitely text. A lot of the students have written their own work, and then they've memorized it. So it's not improvising. We improvised to get to the text. And then we're also pulling text from Annie Dillard's essay on the total eclipse, which I highly recommend reading before the eclipse. And also we've used some Dalton Day poetry. And we have some creative writers in the group, so they've written some wonderful things. We have some Rumi texts. So we've sort of compiled. It's like a collage.
Hi, my name is Caleb Pecoraro. I am the production designer for the show. So set, sound, lights, projections. Julia came to me with the idea of using this dome, and I was very interested from the start. And we knew that we wanted to use projections in the show. So I began doing research on how I would wrap the entire dome in projections. And it has been a learning process getting to the point to where I can wrap it with projections, but now I can make the dome look like anything we want. We have a fabric cover that goes over the dome and it just becomes a nice projection surface. So it can become the moon, it can become a grassy hill, can be a background for the actors traveling through space. It can be a whole number of things.
And next to you is...
I'm Olivia Davis. I'm the stage manager. I'm also, as this is a devised piece, I'm also taking a role as documenting the experience.
And also, Olivia created the whole script for the piece, like documented all of our text and everything that happened. So now we have our working script of this is how we walk on the moon.
Olivia, what's been fun for you as the stage manager and somebody who's kind of documenting everything that's kind of going on?
A lot of the fun of this production is watching it all come together. Mm. This is very different than anything I've done before. A lot of it is due to it being a devised piece. So we don't really know what we have at the beginning, and we have developed that. Very different, very new, but I like it. I like it a lot. Historically, you know, eclipses and space in general have inspired so much of our culture, have inspired so much creativity. And I'm really happy that, you know, this can be one of the things that we put out into the world because of an event like the total eclipse.
And Olivia, next to you is...
I'm Alex Rudnick, and I'm the sound designer for this show. So I've written a few original songs for the show for various scenes, as well as compiled a bunch of sound effects, voiceovers, and just other assorted sound and noise. I came into this not really knowing what to expect, but I just knew that I'd get to make spacey music, and it sounded like fun.
We do have a musical theater number. So for people who do like musicals, we're trying to give you a bit of everything. Experimental theater, musical theater, indie ukulele theater. We have a bit of everything for you. Laser light shows, you like projections, you like film. We have it all. And it's only an hour long.
So let me ask, Alex, when you think about the eclipse and the moon and the sun and outer space, do you think about Star Wars or, you know, I don't know, John Williams, and or do you think of more like David Bowie, or, you know, where some of your influences come from?
There's some a few of the songs I've written I would call space rock. There's some more electronic based, you know, synths and arpeggiators and stuff like that. There is, I pulled a piece from Richard Wagner's Tannhauser Overture for a scene in the show. That'll be fun to watch.
And we might have our own little ode to the 2001 Space Odyssey Space Gate sequence as well.
Caleb, tell a little bit about designing this. And are you kind of interested in space and astronomy and science? And are you a theater major? And how does that all sort of come together with designing this whole thing?
I am kind of an odd student here at the college. I am in the interdisciplinary studies program. So I am actually halfway between robotics and theater. So theater is kind of what I highlight on, but I have that robotics background as well. So working on a devised piece, you have to go into it not knowing what the show is. So I, over winter break, before even knowing what our show was going to be about, I designed the full lights system, the full sound system. I placed where the dome was going to be in our space and, like, figured out where the audience was going to be, as well as placed our three projectors that surround our dome. So it has been quite the challenge to get to the point that I'm at right now, but I have something that I'm proud to share with the world.
Cool.
I think it's really special. We put all this work in, and I think once we experience the total eclipse, I think we'll be like, wow. And we worked on all this creativity and created something in honor of this big cosmic event. And I think that will feel special after, and sort of getting people excited for it. The piece is very exploratory and celebratory of outer space. We all have different, you know, relationships to it and the moon and all of that. And it's really fun sometimes to take a break from the Earth and look up into the night sky and explore, you know, other galaxies. Feels like a relief, maybe. Oh, and when audience come, you get a pair of rose-colored glasses that you're going to have to put on during the show. And then you can keep them.
But they're not eclipse glasses.
Well, no, because then you wouldn't be able to see the show.
Well, they're rose-colored glasses.
Okay. Yes, yes.
This is How We Walk on the Moon, an original theater performance directed by Julia Devine, co-created by her theater students at SUNY Plattsburgh, opens tonight, 7 o'clock, the Black Box Studio Theater in the John Myers Building. And that was some of Alex Rudnick's original music. He composed that piece based on a black hole at the center of a distant galaxy, and you'll hear more of his music. There's a geodesic climbing dome, lights, video projections, dance, all part of the original theater experience opening tonight at SUNY Plattsburgh.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. Monica Sandresky here with Todd Moe. And here in just the last minute of the show, we want to remind you about a couple of things, including if you're still looking for a place to watch the eclipse, you can find many of the places that that's available at our website, ncpr.org/eclipse. There are events in Chazy, Watertown, at Tupper Lake. Find out more at ncpr.org/eclipse. And on Eclipse Day, keep your eyes on the sky and your ears on NCPR. You'll be getting live updates and weather from the NCPR team before some afternoon tunes from 3 to 5 with the Dean's List Eclipse Special. Radio Bob will join host Doyle Dean on the air, and they've got a great playlist for your Eclipse Day celebration. So make sure to tune in And one last thing, there is a parking ban in effect throughout the city of Plattsburgh today due to the snow emergency. Parking is not permitted on any streets. Some lots are still open, though. Find out more from cityofplattsburgh-ny.gov. I'm Monica Sandreski.